3, 2, 1.
Here we go! Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, everyone, to our very special Thanksgiving episode of The Normal Show, episode 130, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, turkey-like, and boring in the dust, and celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future. I was going to say something else, but the future is good enough, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your host, Chris Bevelo, Chief Brand Officer at Revive. I'm joined, as always, by co-host Stephanie Werwell, who's SVP of Integrated Marketing at Revive. Hello again, Stephanie.
Hello, and happy almost Thanksgiving.
Yes, yes, almost. And happy almost Thanksgiving to our other co-host and show's producer, Chase Kleckner, who is Senior Marketing Manager here at Revive. Chase, hi.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Stephanie. Glad to be with you.
I was going to say celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the stuffing. And then I realized I'm not sure everybody likes stuffing. It's kind of a controversial food. I don't know.
I think what you call it is controversial.
That's because
it's dressing to me and it's stuffing to others, and that can be a heated argument around the Thanksgiving table.
This is true, but it's stuffing because you stuff it in the turkey.
Depends on who you ask. We could debate that, but that's not what the show is for.
All right, fair enough. This is a heavily themed Thanksgiving show, so it's appropriate to start off with a controversy around the definition of stuffing versus dressing. We are going to spend most of the show talking about our turkeys of the year. We'll get to that in a second. But just to warm things up, I'm about ready to enter some time off. I'm sure you guys have some time off too. Most people have time off around the holidays. One of the things we love to do when we get together, because we always get together as family, is play games. Do you guys play games around the table, around the floor?
Both of my sides, so my wife's family and my family are big kind of board game, yard game people. And I think the one we always go to is, I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's called Kube. And it's like a Swedish yard game. I looked it up. It's not just a yard game, but a Swedish yard game. And it's kind of like cornhole. So you got two teams on the opposite side, you're distance away, but basically each team has like five blocks on their side of the thing. I guess field, if you would call that. And then you have
the cube pitch.
And you've got six dowels basically to throw and try and knock down the other team's blocks. So if you're looking for an alternative to cornhole, go get you some Swedish cube yard game.
Nice. Nice. Stephanie, how about you?
Well, this will show you how much of a nerd my family members are, but a Thanksgiving game is always the dictionary game, and it has been since I was a kid. So literally you get out a dictionary, one of those really big ones, and you pass it around and you find a word that nobody knows, and then everyone has to write down a definition, and then everyone guesses the real word. So when you have 30 plus people, it can get very long and actually surprisingly fun. But yeah, a bunch of word nerds.
Do you know that there's actually a game that you buy called Boulder Dash, right?
Yes. But why do that when you can just use a dictionary from the 1920s?
That's great. I used to love playing Boulder Dash. We play Catchphrase, which I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It's a little electronic thing, and it's kind of trivia where it's like a theme, and you have to get your team to guess what's on your screen. So like if it's sports and Tom Brady is my thing, I have to give clues so that the people in the room on my team get it. But it's like hot potato. Once you get your team to do it, you pass it to the person sitting next to you. And also, I guess, like musical chairs. Whoever's left with the thing in their hand when the buzzer goes off, their team loses and the other team gets a point. And I'm just going to tell a quick story because my dad is going to play a role in this podcast. And my dad was notorious in this game because my mom was, you know, she's in her like upper 70s and 80s, kind of slow. She'd have reading glasses. So this is a really like upbeat game. And it would get to her and she'd pull her reading glasses down and she'd take her time. My dad, because he's the most competitive person you've ever met, would intentionally, when he would sit next to her, he would intentionally kind of hold on to the thing and pass it to her slowly because she's on the other team, because he knew that would take more time away from her. So
such a good game.
It's a great game, and we would always get on my dad for that, putting my mom on the spot like that. So catchphrase, Coob, and homemade balderdash are our recommendations. All right. So let's talk about the turkeys of the year. First of all, a couple important things. So what we want to do is just year in review of the marketing or advertising campaigns or initiatives that we think flopped. And so turkey of the year is a pretty common thing. There's a sports reporter in our market. I'll give him a shout out in case he listens. I'm sure he does. Patrick Royce, who's done turkeys of the year forever. And he picks like local sports figures. So, but because there was somebody on this podcast, we mentioned this a few times ago, that didn't realize turkey was a negative when we said turkey of the year. We won't call it who that was. We thought we better kind of dig into, well, why is it a negative? So Stephanie, you did a little research and you found out the derivation of turkey as a negative label.
I did. I went down a turkey hole, because I got really curious of the history and all of this stuff. But even today, turkeys are something that Broadway shows use as a word to describe a show that had a lot of previews but maybe was a flop. And the history was that when in Broadway's early days in the early 1900s, there was a lot of tourism, as there still is, around the holiday time period. And so because of that, lots of Broadway shows would open around Thanksgiving, and they would open in the hopes of making money. And many of them were just out to make money and were not good shows. So they called them turkey because of the fact that they were opening around Thanksgiving. And today that word has stuck and proliferated in a lot of different ways.
Yes. I always loved that. I don't know if it's just a derivation of a word, but there's an official name for where a word came from. It's not where that word came from, but the application of that word in this sense. I think those stories are amazing like that. Like, who knew? I didn't know that. Chase didn't know that.
I definitely didn't know that.
All right. So we're going to go through. We've got a number of them. We each have our favorite that we're going to kind of tell a little story on. To set this up, though, Saturday Night Live is one of my favorite cultural touchstones. We watch it every week. I don't know if you guys watch it. We're going to reference it twice in this podcast. But this past week, they had the Audacity in Advertising Awards as a bit. And it was hilarious. The nickname for them was the Pepsis. Because if you remember the semi-horrifying Pepsi ad from a few years ago where Kylie Jenner... the theme of it was, hey, let's all come together and find racial harmony by drinking Pepsi. And she handed Pepsi like almost Vietnam War style, putting a flower in a gun of a soldier. She handed a Pepsi to like a policeman, and that brought, you know, kumbaya to everybody. So that was kind of their how are they going to set up this bit. There's a lot of funny stuff in here. Even some things that we're not comfortable talking about, and we're comfortable talking about a lot of stuff on the show. But there's one bit we're going to play to just help us get it in the mood for the turkeys of the year. So this was a nominee at the end for the most egregious ad for Amazon. So do you want to play it, Chase?
Yeah, here we go.
When I was little, my school burned in a fire. Ever since then, I've dreamed of being a fireman. Driving for Amazon gives me the flexibility to go to firefighter school online while I drive. Today, I'm on my way to being a real firefighter. God bless you, Amazon.
Amazon, God bless us.
That's just amazing. Because doesn't that feel like how Amazon actually thinks of itself? Like Amazon, God bless us.
That's how I think of Amazon.
That's fair. It's fair. I love the part where she's like, driving for Amazon makes it possible for me to go to firefighting school online.
While I'm driving.
While I'm driving, which has nothing to do with anything. Anyway, I just thought that's a good way to set this up. Okay.
I love it. Although I just have to note, you said Kylie Jenner as part of your Pepsi story. It was Kendall Jenner. As a very strong Jenner Kardashian fan, just had to make that correction, but we can carry on.
Thank you. Thank you. The only one I could actually point out of a lineup and get the name right is Kim. And the mom.
Chris.
And the father.
I'm kind of surprised by that with all your reality TV watching.
No, we never got into the Kardashians, so Kylie and Kendall are the same. Kendall.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we actually solicited from some folks in the agency some nominees for the Turkeys of the Year. So we've got three kind of finalists, and then three we're going to dive into. So the first one is in the tone deafness category, and I'm going to try to pronounce it. Balenciagas. What is the brand?
Balenciaga.
Stephanie, you take this one, but please help me out. Balenciaga.
Balenciaga.
Okay. What is Balenciaga and why are they nominated?
Yes. So Balenciaga is nominated because earlier this year, actually just about a month ago, September, they released some pants that caused a serious firestorm. So they released some pants that were basically sweatpants with boxers sewn in on the inside that made them look like sagging pants, probably because of all the nostalgia that's been coming up in fashion recently and just, you know, the growing athleisure movement and all of these things. I would imagine that was some of the thinking behind it. But the pants are, or their sweatpants, and they cost $1,190, which is not a price point that's crazy for Balenciaga or for high fashion. However, the issue is, and the reason that they caused this massive issue is because they look like sagging pants. And sagging pants have long been kind of a stereotypical thing for Black and African-American men. And in fact, one that's caused a lot of problems and one that has in a fashion trend that has caused everything from unnecessary, folks that thought that there was crime happening when there wasn't, or even in one case or probably many cases, unnecessary shooting and death. So just to give one example, there was a man named Anthony Childs who had sagging pants, and a police officer noticed him and saw that he was Black, saw that he had sagging pants, and he was shot and actually led to death. So that is a terrible, terrible story. And when you think about the fact that this fashion trend is being capitalized on and used for profit. And who's buying this, right? The wealthy. And who's profiting from it? The wealthy. And profiting off of something that has been incredibly problematic. So I think that's an important one to nominate, just in this day and age when we need to start thinking a lot more about the things that we're doing in marketing. And we talked about this on our last show, is the importance of inclusive marketing. And I think about product marketing and how much research goes into product development, and why can't we just take a little bit more time and research the history of the trends that we're promoting when we put so much money into research and development and design. So I think that should be an important step added to the product marketing and research functions moving forward.
Yes, absolutely. We've got another one coming up, one of our finalists, that's kind of along the same lines. Okay, the second one is not as serious. It's the Oatly ad. I don't know if people remember from the Super Bowl way back in February of this year, Oatly, which is oat milk, had an ad that was basically its founder, I think, the owner of the company, sitting in a field singing a song about oats and milk. And it was super weird. Some people had it as the best ad of the Super Bowl because it was so weird. I just remember looking at it going, what the bleep was that? And also saying out loud, I do not want to drink oat milk as a result of this. Now, it's not oat milk. What is, I'm getting it wrong. Once again, I'm going to have to turn to Stephanie, who will correct me in my.
It is oat milk.
It is oat milk. Okay.
Yes.
The song was like, there's no oats in the milk or something. That's what his song was. Maybe he just like meant like literally no like oats floating in the milk. Cause that's what I think of when I think of oat milk. All right. So that's the second one. Stephanie's not going to say anything more on that one. The last one is, and this was also, I said we're going to mention Saturday Night Live twice. This was featured on Saturday Night Live in their weekend update because it's a real product. Bud Light has been like way out on this seltzer craze. And I always have thought, like, why would anybody who wants seltzers buy them from Bud Light? And why would anybody who buys Bud Light buy a seltzer from them? But hey, it is one of the more popular ones. But they've introduced for the holiday season eggnog flavored Bud Light seltzer.
Oh. Yum.
Are you guys eggnog fans to start with?
No.
You know, I actually am. It's got to be the right time, the right, you know, it's got to be the right moment. We typically bring out the eggnog when we decorate our Christmas tree. And that is the only time that I have eggnog throughout the year.
I think, not in my seltzer, though. The flavor of eggnog isn't what gets me. It's the texture and the name. Like, it's the worst branded, like, dessert drink ever. Eggnog. Like, why would I want to drink something that's explicitly got egg in it? And nog does not help. So maybe if they called it something else, like oat milk, it would do better. All right. So those were kind of our runners-up. Now let's get to the three we really want to focus on. So, Stephanie, this was a very popular one within our agency when we asked people what they thought the turkey of the year should be. So the winner, one of our three winners, is Subway Eat Fresh. So set this up, because I really want to hear your take on the egregiousness and the horribleness of this this campaign.
Yeah. So I'll preface, there will be two sides to the story, but the setup is Subway has, their sales have been down for a little while. August of 2020, their sales were significantly down. They were closing stores, and over time Subway's become less popular after the boom that it had, a while back. So in order to fix this, they released a new, air quotes if you could see me, new menu called the Eat Fresh Refresh. So had a big ad campaign, lots of celebs, star-studded advertising to talk about how many new items there were and how this was an entire new menu that was even fresher than ever before. And I remember seeing this when it first came out, because I'm somebody who really enjoys healthy food, healthy fast food, if that's possible. And I've always felt like Subway is not fresh enough. And so I was really excited when I saw this, and I went straight to their website. And there was like a hero image on the website that was advertising it. But what I found was when you click through, there was very, very, very little information. And it was very hard to find what are the new products. And it was some new sandwiches, a few sandwiches here and there. So then I, back in when this released, went and looked at, you know, okay, what's the news around this, and found that they had released a few new sandwiches and new products at the time, but there was, quote, more to come, unquote. So what happened was, you know, people went into the stores to try this out and were very confused, like I was. Went into the store, did not see a lot new. It looked like the same line as always. And when asked for some of these sandwiches and new ingredients, many of the stores did not have them or only had some of them. So in fact, you couldn't even get them all, which has long been a problem with new menu items. But I think even more so that this was just so overdone and so significant. Now, here's the kind of two sides of the story part of it. As of recently, in the last couple of months, they've actually noted that their sales are up and the highest point they've ever been since 2013. So perhaps it was successful. But I think it's an interesting one to debate, because there's a lot of elements here. It's the fact that eat fresh, what does that really mean, right? There's no definition of what fresh means. It's the fact that does a few new sandwiches constitute a new menu, especially when you can make a new sandwich, quote unquote, yourself whenever you go to Subway, right? Just by putting some things together in a different and unique way, right? Let's combine barbecue chicken with pickles and call it a new sandwich. So I feel very heated about this one. And I would love to hear your all's thoughts and take.
Well, that's where I was confused, Stephanie, because I'm like, okay, so they introduced new fresh ingredients. Well, they already had what should have been fresh ingredients and things like lettuce and onions and tomatoes. So what else are you introducing that's more fresh than that? I think the problem wasn't that you don't have enough fresh ingredients, is that the ingredients you have aren't fresh. Like, yes. What, you have new refrigerators? Do you, like, somebody in the agency said, I don't care how fresh your food is, it's still a dirty microwave you're using, which is, well, hopefully we don't get sued by Subway. But it's true. Like, you go in there and it's, the environment in most Subways does not make you feel fresh. It doesn't look fresh. And so I was, that's where I was confused. Like, what is refreshed about this? So it sounds like not a lot, at least back when it started.
No, not a lot. And even still today, I went and looked at their menu this morning again. And even to this day, it's really hard to find when you go to their website. Again, there's this hero image that supports it and some nice little imagery, but it's really hard when you dig in to figure out what's actually new. And to me, I think the issue that they've faced is the definition of fresh has changed over the last 10 years. Like perhaps 10 in you know, a decade ago, that would have been considered fresh. Today, you have so many healthy restaurants that are popping up that actually do have what I would consider fresh food, which is vegetables, you know, maybe cooked in different ways, or maybe it's quinoa or whatever, or things that just feel healthier and not just tomatoes that have been sitting out all day long. So I have very strong feelings, if you can't tell. However, their sales are up. So it remains to be seen whether that's true because the pandemic is lifting and people are going back out and traveling again. And you go to Subway when you travel, I do at least, or if it's because of their new menu.
Peloton stock going down, Subway sales going up.
Right. See,
makes
trend
all the
here.
Sense in the world.
All right, Chase, what do you got? Your winner is Burger King, but a specific Burger King effort or campaign or what have you.
Yeah, it was a campaign they did earlier this year on International Women's Day. So they had announced on that day a new program that was designed to highlight gender disparity in the restaurant industry. So great effort, great campaign. And they had built basically a scholarship program for female employees because they announced basically that 20%, this is in the UK, but they also did some things in the US as well, but 20% of the chefs in the UK are women. And if you look at the US, it's only about 5%, which is an extremely very, I guess, gender skewed profession. And then it was interesting because I was like, well, okay, let's dig into this a little bit deeper. And I looked into how many Michelin star restaurants are operated by a female chef, and it's less than 3% as far as all in that whole industry. So really, really gender skewed profession. So interestingly, though, the idea was a great idea, and the initiative was a great idea. The execution of how they told about this scholarship program was not how I think anyone would have in this industry would have said, hey, that's a good idea. Let's move forward with that. So what happened was they sent out a tweet, and the tweet said, women belong in the kitchen. And that was the whole tweet. And you can imagine that started to get quite the storm of replies and retweets. But oddly enough, what they did is they responded to that tweet as a reply to kind of say what the initiative was. But unlike everybody else in the, like, nobody reads the replies, or not a lot of people read the replies. They read the tweet because they're kind of, I guess, single isolated events, right? You can retweet the tweet, which got over 300,000 retweets. But the reply to that one only got 12,000. So a lot more reach to the original tweet. But I think also a little bit behind the scrutiny of the campaign was it was run in the New York Times as a print ad, and the scrutiny was basically, hey, you guys should put a lot more money into the program itself, into the scholarship, because it was only for 2 employees per country in the UK and in Mexico for $25,000. So that was a little bit of, once people started looking into it, it was like, this is the program you're announcing? Like, there could have been a lot more effort and a lot more funding into this initiative. So I think, needless to say, I think they were trying to do something good, and they were trying to address a gender disparity issue that's a huge problem in the, you know, food industry. But the way they went about it and the execution against it was not on point.
I have thoughts. Stephanie, you go first.
I have thoughts as well. This one makes me sad because part of what you're pointing out, Chase, is it came with good intentions, perhaps.
Yeah, the intent.
And it's a perfect example of strategy versus execution, right? Perhaps they had a strong strategy, but there was multiple ways in which the execution failed. One was the scholarship program maybe not being as broad as it should have been. And two was the fact that this tweet lacked severe context. And the idea that we should have, you know, more women as chefs and more women in the restaurant industry is a wonderful idea. But to say women belong in the kitchen is just something that, you know, I can speak for myself. You hear your whole life. Right. You hear your whole life. And it's just one of those things that, like, you belong in the kitchen. You don't belong in the workplace. You don't belong, you know, in other areas. You should be seen and not heard. And it just sparks all this trauma. And I think it was just not thoughtful from an empathy standpoint or with context.
Yeah, that's really helpful, Stephanie, because my first reaction to this, I didn't know about the kind of weak ass scholarship. I can say that on a podcast, right? Part of it, because I think that's bad. But my first thought was like, okay, so we can't use sarcasm anymore. I mean, they clearly intentionally use that phrase to draw attention. And I think, like, in the creative, you know, room, in the boardroom, if that's in a print ad where that's the headline and then the context immediately follows, my guess is it would not have had this negative reaction. It might have still had a little bit, because I think, Stephanie, what you're talking about is what it would trigger initially, even though you're trying to play off of that, you're trying to flip it on its head and say, yeah, we mean the professional restaurant kitchen because there's a shortage of women as chefs. It's hard to get past the visceral feeling that would give you. But in a tweet, you got no chance because there's no context. So also they should have been aware that, like, Twitter's like 1,000 bear traps. They're just open. You put your finger on one and they all go off. Like, you got to know that, yes, you got more attention with this, but I don't know that the old saw that, it, you know, any PR is good PR, bad PR is good PR, whatever that old saying was, really holds true here, even though they followed up pretty quickly. So that's just a super interesting one. I would like to think they could have done that and still use that phrase to catch attention. But maybe they couldn't. Maybe they couldn't.
Yeah. You make a really good point, Chris, which is the point about how it was presented, you know, in the boardroom or in the conference room. And it's so important, especially with social, but with any digital advertising in general, to present it to internally and to stakeholders in the way in which it will be shared. Because it's one thing if you have a slide with the tweet and the print ad and, you know, an out of home or whatever on one slide. And then as you're sitting there in the conference room, you see them all together, but that's not the way in which it will be presented in the real world.
Right. It'd been like putting up a billboard in the old days, or even now, I guess, with just that sentence. And even if it leads to a URL, even if there's more to it, if that's all you leave people with, you're going to have to overcome a really strong negative reaction to get them. Even if it's like, oh, clever. Okay. I get it. You've probably caused more damage than you can make up for. So speaking of causing more damage than you can make up for, I am going to finish this with a marketing initiative. This is using marketing in the broadest sense, which is great because that's how we like to think about marketing. And I'm going to talk about Zillow, which I think most people are familiar with, but I have a really personal angle on this because I went through this very thing, and I'll explain what that is in a little bit, but let me give some context. So this summer, we helped my dad sell his townhome and, you know, moving him into independent living, needed to get out of a four-story, you know, he's 80, a four-story townhome. And so we, you know, it was me, my family, my brother, my wife, and we're like, okay, so this thing, they've lived in it for 20 years. It's, you know, the original carpet, the walls are like, it's just going to need a lot of work, right? And so we brought in a real estate agent. I'm just going to share the numbers because they're public. And he's like, you could sell this for $300,000 if you put this work into it. And given the equity that my dad had in it, that would have worked. And we ran across Zillow offers at the time. And Zillow offers is basically they give you a Zestimate, I think that's what they called it, online. But you didn't have to do anything. And they would say, oh, this is your address. This is what your house is worth. And their Zestimate was $322,000. And I'm like, oh, that sounds too good to be true. So I did a ton of research. And it turns out what people would say was, look, they're going to put that online, but it's pending an inspection. And what happens is they come in to do inspection, and then they're going to tell you, well, now that we've seen it, it's probably worth $290, $280 in this case. It's going to be lower than what you could do if you sold it yourself. That's how they make their money. And there was a lot going on, and we're like, well, we can try it. It doesn't hurt, right? So Zestimate 327, they come in to do the inspection, and they're like, yep, or 322. Like the only thing they charged was like $900 for cleanup. And I was like, really? Really? Like, okay, well, that's great. Is this, we just kept waiting for the other shoe to drop and the other shoe to drop. And we closed on it at 322 in the middle of June. And we were all just like, wow, that was so easy. We didn't have to fix anything. We didn't fix anything. No new carpet, no new paint, nothing. Honest to goodness, it was all virtual, whatever. So I just thought like, wow, that's amazing service. That's great. So they put it on the market at 343. Okay. So remember what I told you it was worth by a local real estate agent dude. So they put it on for 343. So they're looking to make about 8% on it. And they had fixed it up. New carpet, new paint. So subtract that out of there, right? Okay. So here we are in November. They have cut the price 8 times. It is now on the market. It was recently most cut last week, down to 275. So they bought it at 322. They are now selling it at 275, plus I would assume $5,000 to $10,000 worth of upkeep on the paint and whatever. So $50,000 loss on this one house, which helps explain why Zillow is now getting out of this business, because in the 3 months, coincidentally, between July, August, and September, they lost $420 million nationally on this product. They are no longer going to be buying houses, flipping them, and selling them. They are cutting 25% of their workforce, their entire workforce, which is 8,000 people, because they've lost so much money on this. And really what was behind it was the use of an algorithm that they had created to figure out what the right price was to first buy the house at and then to sell it. And of course, you guys remember, at least in this market, that the housing market was insane. It was crazy, crazy hot. And so when we heard what they were selling it for, we're like, well, maybe they know something we don't. Maybe $345,000 makes sense. Turns out, no. Turns out their AI was wrong across the board, materially. So colossal fail on that marketing effort in terms of offering a new kind of product. It's not new. That type of home buying has been around for a while. They're not even the biggest player in it, but they were growing to be. And so that is a big, giant 40-pound turkey waddling around in the marketing landscape. Now, I don't know if you guys have anything to add to it, but it was so bizarre going through that and then seeing the implications.
Yes, out in the real world. I think it's a fascinating example, as both the business and marketing world has been putting all of our eggs in the AI basket recently, right? And the idea of that is sound. I think the future will certainly be an AI future and an algorithm future. However, as we talked about when we chatted about Facebook and Meta, in a lot of cases, the technology is just not where we want it to be quite yet. And so to base that much on it is pretty significant risk. And sometimes it's easy to be like, well, the numbers show us this, so therefore it must be true. But that's all, you know, programmed and based on certain factors that folks decided are important that may or may not actually be important. So to me, the lesson is understand your algorithms, understand what's behind them, understand the risk, run the, you know, cost benefit analysis and really have a sense for whether or not you should base your entire business model on it.
It was so bad that there were TikToks about rumors that they were intentionally pegging the prices that they were selling higher to elevate other price values in the neighborhood they were at to get more out of those. So it made it seem like there were these super sophisticated evil conspiracy. And it turned out they just were idiots. They just didn't. I mean, at some level, somebody was an idiot. The algorithm was an idiot. Whoever ran it, whoever created it, whoever looked at the numbers and said, this is working out. I mean, at least they pulled the plug after 3 months, which is fairly quick. But $420 million is nothing to sneeze at. So there you go.
I was in the real estate industry a couple of years ago, and the Zestimate has always been a problem. As far as a couple of years ago, it was always high, and I think it still is higher than it maybe market price. And they tried to introduce some updates to it to make it more accurate by looking at the images and trying to make sure everything was up to date. And or if it wasn't up to date, they would lower it. But yeah, the AI functioning for home buying may not be up to par as it is when it's maybe buying stocks or.
Yeah. Other. I mean, it's innocuous in just saying like, hey, we think this is the price of your home. Not a lot of harm there other than like real estate agents having to talk their clients down from it. But then to actually base your business on we're going to buy them at this price so we can flip them. All right. Well, good. That was a great first shot at turkeys of the year. I think those are really good. We're going to have to start collecting them somewhere around next Thanksgiving. We'll have new ones. So with that, let's wrap it up. Stephanie and Chase, as always, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thank you.
Absolutely. You both have a great Thanksgiving.
You too. Everybody out there should have a great Thanksgiving.
That's right. Not just you two.
Just us. Just us. That's nice. If there's something you want us to cover, we're not going to be back till after Thanksgiving. But as always, you can always let us know if there's something you want us to talk about. You can shoot us an email at nonormal@reviveagency.com. Make sure if you're listening to this on iTunes that you give us a review, give us a rating, share the show out. The more people, the merrier. Let's go ahead and go right into the holiday season with that. But otherwise, we'll be back after Thanksgiving. And until then, don't be satisfied with the no normal. Push. No, don't be satisfied with the normal. Don't be satisfied with the normal.
That's it.
Be set. Go for the no normal. All right. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you next time. 3, 2, 1.